holy light. The heating, that never turned off by the way, explained the sweat patches and permanent condensation. As you can still see from my 2010 YouTube videos, a couple of album posters and some Dan mail can do wonder to transform a small space. Thank you to the people who sent me mail. You were literally the only source of colour in my off-cream life.
If I looked at these pictures and thought I was watching a prison documentary, I'd be like, wow, prison is horrible.
I know.
This is so bad.
It was, you don't know what I went through, Phil.
What are all those pipes for?
I don't know.
What are they piping?
It was so loud. All this being said, apart from something my friends to this day refer to as the Phantom Poo incident, which I will not be talking about in this audiobook, with enough pasta and late-night kebab shop visits, I managed to survive and very much enjoyed my independence and socialising.
Social life.
I remember the thing was leaving your room door open. It said, hey, my metaphorical door is also open. Come talk to me. Let's be friends. I spent the first week playing Halo with the curtains drawn, eventually realizing you have to overcome your social anxiety if you want to use the fridge. I think I lucked out in that the random assortment of people I was put there with were all very cool and interesting. We all got on very well, apart from the two international students, which were a bit strange. No offence to every other country in the world. The first was a guy who I never spoke to in the entire year, despite living in the room above me. I remember on one single occasion at about 3 a.m. after a innocent night of exploring the city of Manchester, stumbling into the kitchen to see him in tighty-whities, wielding a cleaver, furiously hacking at a whole chicken. To this day, I'm not sure if that was a strange nightmare that infiltrated my consciousness, but the most I know about him is that he lives life on the edge when it comes to appropriate clothing near sharp utensils and gas flames. The other was a girl who was very quiet, which I attributed to some kind of generic social shyness, until the day she finally decided to let loose on the last day of the year, when I presume what was an entire lifetime of repressed emotional outburst happened over 4 hours. I remember her having a heart-to-heart with me next to a very loud speaker blasting dubstep, in which she was possibly trying to tell me that she murdered someone in Japan, but I like to think I misheard a lot of it. Yeah, I removed her as a friend from Facebook. Oh, and then there was the really cool guy who liked video games and Kanye West and anime, who also shared many of my interests in fashion, books, and even general 2 a.m. philosophy. Until one day he told everyone that he spent all of his time gaming instead of studying, and then he mysteriously disappeared. I have not seen or heard from him since. Maybe I should have added him on Facebook. Or the chicken underwear guy. Come to think of it, why don't more of them keep in contact with me? Oh, probably because every time I filmed a YouTube video, they just heard a guy talking to himself in his room.
Studying.
I sometimes forget, and even occasionally at the time forgot, the reason why I was there. Ah yes, the law degree. Now, I want to be clear, for anyone like me who saw Legally Blonde and was inspired by the idea of sassing out a criminal with your knowledge of hairstyling, or anyone who has parents brimming with pride at your academic success and desire to study the honourable field of law, I am not saying you shouldn't, because it's absolutely horrifying, but it's absolutely horrifying. Murders are fun, yes, understanding exactly what the Queen does is fun, yes, but the details of contract law aren't. No offence to contracts. Legal language is basically French. No offence, France. It might look like it's written in your native language, but it is so strangely worded that I had to read every paragraph in my textbook about 7 times to understand it. This is when I understood the profound lesson that you should study something that you're interested in. If you study psychology or literature, whatever you do will always, at the end of the day, be related to something that you're interested in. 3 months into the semester, I wanted to spoon my eyes out. One of the lecturers had a voice that I am convinced vibrated at some kind of droning frequency that makes humans fall asleep. There is no other explanation. Seminars, I discovered, was a fancy name for sitting in a circle of 10 people with your professor, going round one by one realizing how little studying you've done compared to the person next to you. I survived the year somewhat successfully, but it was traumatic.
Conclusion.
Well, as we all know, in the summer between the first and second year, I had a mild mental breakdown slash first existential crisis about wanting to follow my passions and being free, which somehow resulted in me actually thinking that dropping out of university to become a full-time internet hobo was a good idea. Good thing Radio 1 were interested in us and you all liked my videos, or I would be living in a cardboard box. Oh, I'm a terrible role model. Go read Phil's university story. He has a master's degree, for God's sake. Phil's university life. The first day.
I was in the middle of Tesco holding a selection of tea towels when I burst into tears. Thankfully, it wasn't a post-traumatic tea towel related flashback. It was the day before I was leaving for university and my mum was helping me buy all the stuff I needed. Cutlery, bed sheets, a bin. Was I mature enough to own my own bin? It didn't feel like it. I was terrified. The tea towels were the straw that broke the Phil's back. I didn't feel ready. I didn't want to leave my family in Rossendale. I didn't like change, and I definitely didn't know how to look after myself. I had an awkward Tesco mum hug with Janet, the checkout lady, watching us, pulled myself together, put the tea towels in the basket. There was no going back now. I was going. It was happening. Thankfully, it was one of the best decisions I ever made. The car journey to York University was the most terrified I've ever been. So many thoughts were melting my brain. Will people like me? How will I know what to do? What if they're all lizard people? What if I get lost and set the kitchen on fire? And what? 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 After an endless 2-hour drive, I arrived on campus with my parents and they helped me unpack my computer, pinboard, cry-inducing tea towels, and most importantly, my Buffy the Vampire Slayer box set. My parents offered to stay and take me for dinner, but I knew that I had to rip the plaster off and be brave. I walked them to the car, waved my goodbyes, and returned to my room. I was alone.
Accommodation.
York University is beautiful. A huge flowing campus of lakes, geese, statues, and old-fashioned houses. Small fact, if you kill a goose, you are banned for life, but if you kill a person, you can return to campus after you finish your sentence. They do love their geese. Unfortunately, my accommodation was not beautiful. I was in a house of 5 girls, 5 boys, 2 toilets, and 1 shower. 1 shower! What were they thinking? My stomach sank when I realized I'd have to share a bathroom with other people. To make it worse, the toilet was right next to the kitchen, so there was no privacy at all. No more hour-long phone sessions on the toilet. Oh, Angry Birds. How I missed you. The walls and ceilings were about as thick as a sheet of cellophane. I could hear everything. I could even hear the guy in the room next to mine peeing into his own sink.
Oh no.
I could hear it. I've repressed most of the other things I heard. I bought some bomb disposal strength earplugs, so that kind of helped. A guy I met on his way into his bedroom told me that they always put a tall boy in the room next to the front door, so he'll be able to defend himself from burglars a lot easier. Thanks, Pete. Thankfully, my door had 3 locks on it, and I had an elaborate escape plan involving my window and an imaginary training montage of ninja skills. Beside the lack of toilet, strange stains, and high probability of burglar death, I had actually made my room pretty homely. Comfy duvet, laptop, DVDs, sink, what more could I need? Food. Not even a single raisin in my room. It was time to venture into the kitchen.
Social life.
When it was time to meet people, my brother's advice was buzzing in my mind. Brother advice 1.
Maybe don't reveal all of your quirks and your Buffy obsession straight away.
Bad advice. People definitely click less with you if you hold back your personality. It turned out my university housemates were way more relaxed and actually embraced any weirdness in the house. Brother advice 2.
Prop your door open with an open box of Haribo.
Good advice. My bedroom was right next to the front door, so I met loads of other students as they were moving in too. I hung out in the kitchen for the next few hours, and I made an effort to introduce myself to every person who entered, even if they didn't immediately seem like someone that was Phil compatible. It was a really diverse mix of people, a sporty girl, art students, a guy into heavy metal, a girl who wore fluorescent green shorts every day, and even a girl from North Carolina. I struck up conversation with a guy called Andy from New Zealand, and we bonded over the TV show Lost. How I miss Lost. I think I may have weirded him out slightly by immediately suggesting we go watch it on his bed. My social skills needed a bit of work, okay? Wow, I just saw a photo of me from university. My hair was so spiky. Look at that, I look like a little hedgehog.
You look like, what's his face from The Inbetweeners?
I look like Simon from The Inbetweeners.
Yes, you do. Sorry for bringing that up.
Such a fetus. Anyway, the plan for the first night was to go to a club, aka my worst nightmare. If you watch my videos, you'll know me and clubs don't mix well together. I hadn't planned for this. I can't dance. What was I going to do? It didn't actually turn out to be so bad. I just kind of bobbed my head up and down like a chicken on the dance floor and jumped around a bit to the Killers for a few hours. Got to know my housemates a little bit. Of course, living with 10 people is never going to be easy. I bonded with one girl over Crash Bandicoot until it turned out she didn't like Crash Bandicoot and was only playing it because she thought I fancied her. When I said I didn't see her that way and I was only in it for the Bandicoot, she threw a drink in my face. Who could have known Crash Bandicoot could be so dramatic? The guys in my house also began a prank war against each other. Their first attack on me was one of the most severe. I got back from a lecture and my whole bedroom was empty, apart from a note reading, "Go into the kitchen." I walked into the kitchen to see they had moved my entire bedroom into there. Even my computer was set up and switched on the kitchen worktop. Of course, they didn't help me put any of it back. Lesson to learn from that one, lock your door. I wasn't really much of a prankster, so I never really got revenge. Oh wait, I did put salt in their sugar once. Somebody stop me. I got the entire house to bond one weekend by making Andy wear a tinfoil mask and filming a horror movie set in the future for my channel called The Game. It was actually my first video upload to Amazing Phil before I started vlogging. Little fact for you there. Another thing that went down in history was the moment I forgot I was making toast at the exact time the toaster decided to break and stay switched on, melting the entire toaster and filling the house with smoke and calling out the fire brigade.
Wow.
Oops.
Okay, there's actually a picture of... What is that?
I am in that picture.
What am I looking at? Is that the kitchen?
You can't see me. I'm waving in the plume of smoke.
It's like a volcano scene from a movie or something.
It was horrific.
Phil.
Don't breathe this. Throughout my university years, I went from knowing no one to making loads of friends on my course, bonding with my housemates, and even moving in with five of them into our very own house, complete with mouse and creepy landlord who occasionally slept in our garden in a tent. No, that is another story. I'd like to say I keep in touch with all of them now, but unfortunately life isn't like that. Friends change and drift apart, but I'm sure we'll cross paths again someday.
Studying.
Oops, I never actually said what I was doing at university. That's kind of the whole point you go there, right? I was studying English language and linguistics after loving English language at school and having a genuine interest in languages. I'll be honest, though, that 50% of my degree was a confusing waffle fest of 3-hour lectures and near impossible homework. The exams were hard, too. Rocket science hard. I think I chewed through so many pens in one exam that the Biro police were launching a serial killer inquiry. I actually scraped through my first year and somehow a light switched on in my brain and I did pretty well in years 2 and 3. I stayed on to do an MA in post-production and visual effects, which really helped out my YouTube and is the reason why I know how to animate Kristen Stewart's face onto the body of a small badger. Totally worth a student loan.
Phil, there's a picture here that you've annotated with you studying hard, where you seem to be sat on a staircase with your pants around your ankles.
Yeah, I don't have much explanation for that, so we should probably move on.
Yeah, just casual Thursday night.
Yeah.
Conclusion.
If I could go back into uni again, I think I'd try to meet even more people. I signed up to about 17 clubs and never went to any of them. Maybe I could have been super buff and in the naked rowing calendar if I'd actually turned up at the first 8 a.m. practice. Who knows? Overall, I think university was my transformation from an extremely shy caterpillar with spiky hair into a mildly awkward moth with emo hair. I'm not the fully formed flaming hawk that I want to be yet, but I'm getting there. Kinda. So what's going on here, Dan?
So here we have a contrast of two documents. On the right, we have the proud photo of you on your graduation day.
Look at my hair!
Your hair's pretty awful, but you pull off the cap, definitely.
I should wear that more often.
Holding a degree, is that proudly framed on your mum's staircase?
Yep.
And on the left of the page, we have my letter confirming my withdrawing from the university. There we go. Very proud of my life.
Oh, it says they make the opportunity to wish you well for the future.
I actually said in my resignation letter, I'm leaving to go be a video blogger. And I kind of expected them to be like, what? But they actually just didn't care. So there we go.
Another contrast now. We have Dan's wardrobe and my wardrobe.
So, Phil, how would you describe your wardrobe?
I'd say mine is a colourful variety of amazingness, while yours is like staring into a black abyss. I can't even see clothes.
You can't even see where the shirts are separate. That is my actual wardrobe, though. It's just like, it makes me happy when I open it. It's just like an abyss.
At least you've got colourful coat hangers.
Yes.
That's the colourfulness you want to release, isn't it?
Maybe one day, Phil. Maybe one day.
The Manchester apartment.
Ah, the first Dan and Phil pad.
A.K.A. the flat with a PH.
Or the phallus of dreams.
We didn't call it that, Dan, and that sounds really wrong.
Oh, wait, yeah, okay, that does. I'm so sorry.
Yep, in 2011, after Dan gave up his legally blonde dreams, we decided to move in together.
It seemed like such a perfect idea. I desperately needed a place to live, Phil was going crazy living alone, and we were both YouTubers. No more feeling judged for talking to ourselves in our bedrooms at 4 a.m.
Wait, what do you mean, seemed like a good idea?
So, that apartment was pretty cool, wasn't it? I mean, it was on the 18th floor, looking over all of Manchester, kind of like Pride Rock. How on earth did we get it?
Total look. I look at apartments on property websites for fun, because I'm a cool guy like that.
Uh-huh.
And I noticed this one for a weirdly low price.
Someone probably died on the breakfast bar.
It was suspiciously clean.
Although, didn't we have to get your dad to speak to the owners because they didn't understand what YouTube was and how it could pay the rent?
Yeah, it turns out saying that we make videos in our bedrooms doesn't sound great.
I was just happy to escape the hell of my university accommodation. I kind of miss Manchester, though. It's such a cool city with everything you'd want.
Yeah.
I feel like I've done it now, though. I mean, when your favourite milkshake place names a drink after you, it's definitely time to leave.
The Dan special with Maltesers blended with butterscotch topped with a flake?
Actually, they added the flake. These cheeky minxes. They added a topping just so it could cost 50p more.
What?
I'm on to you.
At least I still get to go up north to see my homeland, though. Do you miss the creepy guy dressed as a statue who gave out lollipops?
He haunts my nightmares to this day. Let's have a tour of the apartment. Front door.
This was the scene of many incidents, such as the Holy Mother.
Was that when a lady tried to get you to join a cult?
Yes, I was absolutely terrified.
No, I would have gone along just to meet her. I'm imagining something with tentacles, but I imagine I'd actually just be disappointed.
Also, once when we were taking in our shopping, a drunk guy just walked into our lounge thinking it was his apartment.
You were convinced that we were going to die. I still remember your manly squeal that you made. I was just happy to interact with another human.
It was kind of like, nah!
Very manly.
Mm-hmm.
Bathroom.
Pretty swank bathrooms, actually.
Coming from my shared university bathrooms, you have no idea how much this meant to me.
Wasn't this the bath where you exploded Coke and Mentos up your shirt for a dare?
Yes. I remember peeling the minty bits of shell that had fused to my flesh for weeks afterwards. Good times. Breakfast bar.
Didn't you once sensually rub yourself all over this?
Yes. I think we have a picture as well. Look at it. Wow, I was really going for that, wasn't
I?
The surface was just asking for it, to be honest.
So how often do we actually have breakfast on it?
Not once in an entire year. It was mainly used as a thing to balance cameras on when we filmed cooking videos and sketches. Coffee table.
Did you know this is actually coffee table number two? Yeah, the first one got completely destroyed when Dan fell on it.
A bit of context here. I have a thing called orthostatic hypertension, which is the fancy term for having really slow blood. So being an obnoxiously tall person, whenever I stand up really quickly, when the blood is still in my feet, I fall over like a logged tree.
I kind of thought you died, but when I noticed you hadn't, it was kind of funny.
Thanks.
Balcony.
This is the balcony where Phil once dropped a bouncy ball off the edge and it bounced higher than a lamppost and nearly killed a pigeon.
It was for science, okay? I mainly went out on the balcony to look through the windows of the business hotel that was opposite us.
I'm moderately certain that's illegal.
Hmm. Phil's room.
Wait, why did you get the bigger room again?
Because I had more subscribers.
Fair enough. I was jelly of the ensuite.
There's nothing like being able to sit on the toilet with the door open.
Dude, your bedroom didn't have a lock. I could have just walked in.
Oops. Always knock. Dan's room.
I remember the width between my bed and the opposite wall being just wide enough to sidestep through on tiptoes.
You made most of the space you had.
I like to think that the spiritual energy of all the videos I filmed on that bed will linger in the property for years to come.
The spiritual energy of you ranting about people at cinemas and fanfiction?
I also removed most of the paint from the walls by blue-tacking posters everywhere, but shh, don't tell anyone. And then we have the portal to another dimension.
Little did our viewers know at the time, but hidden in the cupboard next to the front door was an interdimensional vortex.
This is where we hid all of our alter egos from our videos and the things that we couldn't be bothered to tidy, like mystery wires and those bits of lint that just appear on the floor.
It was quite convenient. Mm. The forces only demanded a blood sacrifice once a week, and sometimes we got to travel to the other side.
Remember the time that we visited other Manchester and rode meat scooters down the hill towards the teeth shrine?
Good times.
Good times.
Roommate assessment form. Evaluator.
Dan Howell.
Roommate name.
Phil Lester.
Time had as roommate.
3 years.
General tidiness.
Phil is an incredibly messy person. I don't think he's ever made a coffee without somehow spilling enough sugar and instant powder to turn the entire kitchen counter into an ice rink of caramelized brown goo. He leaves paper all over the office. He leaves his clothes on the bathroom floor. He leaves socks in the most random places you could imagine. And worst of all, the contact lens pot. Every day, Phil takes out his contact lenses, puts them in a little plastic pot, and then balances them directly on top of the tap. Moving things off a tap may not sound that bad. Every single day. Is this the right section to bring up the time he stuck holographic Spice Girl stickers all over our furniture?
Household chores.
Phil's actually pretty good at the chores. I think he stacks the dishwasher and does the laundry for fun, or probably out of some kind of procrastination-related guilt, but either way, he gets the jobs done.
Noise.
He will blare video game soundtracks at a dangerously high volume when cleaning the kitchen, and his Celine Dion renditions in the shower aren't the best thing early in the morning, but most of the noise in our apartment we make together. Wait, no, that came out wrong. I meant playing video games. Video games!
Food.
Oh, my God. Okay, Phil has what we refer to as a secret eating problem. He'll tell me we're all about the health now and buy us salads for lunch, then volunteer to cook tofu and air stir fries, and there I am, thinking it's out of the goodness of his heart. No. Roughly every 25 minutes, Phil will sneak into the kitchen with levels of stealth that I'm sure would impress most intelligence services and eat something without anyone finding out. What happened to my cereal? I thought we had 4 cookies left, not 1. Where are those sweets that I bought for our friends coming over later? The guilt is always plain to see within his eyes. At least he regularly buys snacks. Plus, when he's not eating the food, he's pretty good at cooking, so I guess that's all right.
bathroom usage.
What is this thing you call a towel? I wouldn't know, as despite owning five, I've never seen them, as they're all on Phil's bedroom floor. Why does anybody need three towels after having a shower? Like, I get two towels if you want to put one on your hair, not that Phil really requires it, but what is the third one for? Shoulder drying? Ankle drip protection? General emotional support? There is nothing worse than washing your hands and having to walk through the house dripping water onto your socks, desperately searching for an appropriate place to wipe them.
Overall rating?
4 out of 5. Meets expectations.
Comments?
A couple of issues, but I guess he could be a cannibal or a beekeeper or something, so it works out pretty well. Roommate assessment form. Evaluator.
Phil Lester.
Roommate name.
Dan Howell.
Time had as roommate.
3 years.
General tidiness.
Beware of Dan if he loses something. Generally, he's quite a tidy guy, but if he loses a precious sock or a strange zippy jumper, he will turn into a rampaging beast and turn the entire house upside down looking for it. One time, I caught him emptying out a box of Christmas decorations onto the floor looking for a USB cable. I mean, I'd left it there, but that is not the point. He also throws out any piece of paper he finds in the bin, so protect important documents with your life. Examples have included our holiday boarding passes, important receipts, and my script the night before the Brit Awards.
Household chores.
Dan's pretty great at tidying the lounge and rearranging all the DVDs into alphabetical order. However, he still needs training in the art of not putting red socks in with the whitewashing, as I now have a lovely collection of pink shirts and boxer shorts.
Noise.
I think we're both as bad as each other when it comes to noise, so I feel more sorry for the people sharing our walls. Dan usually goes to bed later than me, so I occasionally wake up to him aggressively shouting at the TV while playing Mario Kart.
Food.
Dan claims I'm a secret eater, but most of the time I'm just inspecting the cereal to check it's still in the box, and it's fresh enough for the next morning. You believe me, right? Right? Okay, I have a problem, but I think Dan needs to hide his snacks better, or perhaps invest in some kind of cereal padlock. It's all his fault, really. If he bought some kind of cheese-related cereal, then there wouldn't be a problem. On a more positive note, Dan does cook great Indian food and understands the perfect science of cooking microwave popcorn without leaving too many kernels. Side note, he eats the kernels. What is that about?
Bathroom usage.
I don't know how many times Dan washes his body, but do not let him loose on the shower gel, as he can use half a bottle in one go. He'll also occasionally lock himself in the bathroom to practice his rendition of Bring Me to Life by Evanescence, singing both the male and female parts. It's actually quite melodic, so I don't mind too much.
Overall rating?
4 out of 5. Meets expectations.
Comments?
Generally a good housemate. I probably would have given him 5 if I wasn't searching for my birth certificate in a bin bag while wearing pink boxer shorts right now.
Jessica's page. Heya, my name's Jessica, and welcome to my Totally Awesome Fab page. I'm guessing you want to know all about me, so here's a little thing I wrote for all of the people I meet, because I'm popular. My favorite color is pink. My favorite artist is Demi Lovato. Selena can get out, she's so basic. I might message something at her on my phone later. My best friend is Becky, but you don't need to know about her. She's kind of boring, lol. My favorite outfit is my purple cardigan. I wear it everywhere I go because it's awesome for my figure and just shows the right amount of cleavage. Oh, it used to be Becky's, but I swapped it for an old gray one of mine because, you know, I look better in it. My hobbies include partying and dating and shopping. Some people call me loud, but I can't help being super confident in how beautiful I am. It's just how I was born. Don't be gel. I'm living with my parents at the moment, as my dumb ex Troy made me move out of his house after dumping me. I mean, who does that? He's such a jerk. Who calls someone a stalker just for going to their house and climbing into their bedroom after not replying to a text for 15 minutes? How was I supposed to know if he wasn't dead? My mum is, like, super religious, and once she told me that if I don't focus on school and change my priorities, that she'll send me to a nun place. I mean, WTF? Ugh. Oh my god, I hate my mum. She's so annoying. Can you imagine me in that stupid black outfit with a thing over my head covering my hair? That'd be so stupid. Lol. Dan? Oh, that guy. I don't know, he's weird. He's always in some awkward situation when I'm trying to party, and TBH, I just don't care. Becky's page. Hi, my name is Becky. People don't usually ask stuff about me, so I'm not really sure what to say. I like music. My mum, who's also called Becky too, was a big fan of the Beatles. I mainly focus on my work. I don't think I'd really have time for a boyfriend, not that anyone's really paid attention to me before. My favourite item of clothing is a grey sweater. I like it because it helps me blend in, I guess. I don't like drawing too much attention to myself. I'm kind of shy, but my best friend Jessica is really great because she's really cool and popular, and she lets me hang out with her. I'm grateful for that. What do I think of Dan? Oh, he seems like a nice guy. I've never really spoken to him myself. I remember Jessica talking about him a couple of times, but I don't know how much she likes him.
The Tale of Becky and Jessica. This is a true adventure through friendship and drama. Much more interesting than Dan and Phil, to be honest. This is their story. 6th of September, 2012. Jessica encounters a pervert on the tube.
Oh my god, Becky, I just saw the tallest lesbian ever.
23rd of November, 2012. Jessica gets dumped by Troy.
I can't believe Troy would do that to me!
4th of January, 2013. Jessica tries to give up chocolate on New Year's Day.
I've been going cold turkey from chocolate for 10 hours, and I'm still not Beyoncé.
28th of February, 2013. Jessica tries to hit on Dan and friend and insults Becky.
Shut up, Becky. No one's talking to you.
12th of May, 2013. Jessica complains about Becky betraying her.
I can't believe that after everything we've been through, you would just throw away our friendship.
29th of October, 2013. Jessica's at a party and sees Dan drop a pile of discs.
This party is over.
9th of December, 2013. Jessica confronts Becky on the phone.
Becky, why did you unfriend me on Facebook?
An interview with Jessica. Jessica, when was the last time you spoke to Becky?
Oh, I haven't spoken to Becky in like over a year. I remember she deleted me on Facebook and she wouldn't even tell me why. What a freak.
Do you think it may be to do with how you treated her?
What do you mean, how I treated her? We were like totally best friends. I took her to parties, I told her all my gossip, we even swapped her lame clothes.
Do you think the way you talked to her was okay?
What do you mean?
Well, I mean from what we've seen, it seems like you talked down to her a lot and almost used her just to boost your own confidence.
Becky didn't take any of these things seriously, right? I mean, I was kind of joking.
Well, what do you think? Do you understand why Becky chose to do what she did?
Wow, I feel like this is the first time I've ever thought about it. Becky's just always been there for me, you know? Even her moms were friends back when they used to meet up and write weird fanfiction together. I guess I've been kind of a bitch. Oh my god, I need to tell her I'm sorry.
Do you think if you apologize, your friendship can continue?
Honestly, I've just felt so lost without her. It was the worst year of my life not having a best friend, and you know what? If I have to change to get that back, I'm gonna do it. Becky, I promise I will be better for you. Just let me say how I feel.
Becky declined to comment on the situation when told about Jessica's plans to apologize. We can only wait and hope this newfound insight can bring them back together. Hashtag Bessica forever. Hello, Phil's Lion here. Here's a friendly reminder to try and enjoy life. I know you're thinking, what do you know? You're just a small stuffed lion. Well, trust me, I have seen a lot. Don't get me started on the Great Zebra War, as this isn't about me, it's about you. Please treasure every moment of your existence, as one day you could be left too close to a hair straightener and set on fire. I'm speaking from experience. Phil really needs to stop leaving those things next to my tail. Seriously though, if you're not careful, life could pass you by, and before you know it, you'll have teenage cubs and you'll be planning a nice area of the Serengeti to retire to. Say yes to more things! If there's a trip to a watering hole, go to it! If there's a warthog party but you don't know many animals, say yes anyway! What's the worst that could happen? You'd have a slightly awkward 5 minutes avoiding hyenas before you get chatting to someone? I met my wife in circumstances like this. I could have just relaxed on Phil's bedside table, minding my own business, but I thought to myself, self, it's time to see what is beyond this bedside table. I ventured as far as the sock drawer and met my beautiful and slightly unusual wife. Look at me now, I'm a family lion. I'm not saying you should move to Africa and get married. Feel free to be single and enjoy your own company. It's your life. Don't feel pressured to have cubs and settle down if you don't want to. Just make sure you remember that a billion coincidences had to occur for you to exist, and each passing moment is a possibility for new adventure. Between you and me, I know that I'm a stuffed animal, and I will never see Africa in real life, but just seeing the joy on my family's face when I bring home a small piece of cereal or an abandoned crisp from Phil's floor makes everything worth it. The year before that, when I was being born in a Japanese factory, I had no idea this would be a possibility. Just before I go, a few small pieces of advice. If you are currently sad, don't worry, as things are more likely to get better than worse. School doesn't last forever, and circumstances can change in an incredible way over the course of a year. Don't trust squirrels. Drink lots of water. Ask lots of questions. Keep good friends close. Don't race a giraffe. Oh, and when the opportunity comes up, please don't move to Mars. It's dusty and there isn't anything to do there. It's been great chatting with you. I wish I had more time. I'm going to return to sitting quietly now. Thanks for listening. Lion. A day in the life of Phil's lion.
Lion is sitting on Phil's bed, looking distressed.
Lioness, where are you? Lioness? She went out to fetch some of Phil's cereal crumbs and never returned.
He looked in a plant.
She's not in this plant. Why do humans bring giant trees into their homes?
He tries looking in the bathroom.
She's not in Dan and Phil's sink next to the shaver. Why do humans shave their manes? I'm proud of mine. I check the shower, but Phil is currently in it singing My Heart Will Go On. Remind me to bleach my eyes later.
Suddenly, he hears a shout from Dan's bedroom.
Lion! Help!
Lioness is trapped in the claws of a giant inflatable dinosaur.
Help me!
Lion runs into the room, brandishing a fork.
I'll save you, Lioness.
With a brave joust, he stabs the inflatable dinosaur in the ankle.
Take this!
The dinosaur wildly deflates, leaving Lioness on the floor safely next to Lion.
Lion! You killed Darren! I thought you were in danger. No, we just needed help deciding what movie to rent. Oops.
Rest in peace, Darren the Inflatable Dinosaur.
The Life and Times of Simon the Shrimp.
Did you know that I became a father in 2011? A father to a prehistoric pet created from powder, but a father nonetheless. This pet was Simon the Shrimp. It didn't feel right making this without featuring this little guy. He changed a lot of lives and inspired many people to live their life to the fullest. So let's go back to the beginning.
Birth.
It all started on Christmas Day 2010 when I opened some prehistoric triops from Santa. Triops are incredibly weird crustaceans that you can grow from powder, and on the 23rd of January I decided to birth these little monsters with the help of Dan. In the moment that life was created, I felt so powerful.
From the first day, I wanted nothing to do with this.
I know.
I just, you know,
hated them.
Disgusting prehistoric crustaceans are just not my cup of tea. You were like, hey, we're bringing this life into the world. And I was like, you're going to have to take it for walks. I'm not paying the vet bills.
What would happen if you put it in a cup of tea? I guess that's a different
question. This is why you're a terrible pet owner.
After a couple of days, they grew into triops. These creatures were fascinating, but also really gross.
Mm-hmm.
They would constantly fight each other to the death, and they'd also do sit-ups on the bottom of the tank in a race against time to shed their exoskeletons before drowning.
I mean, if that doesn't make you realize how gross these things were, I don't think that shedding exoskeletons could be any worse, to be honest.
Yeah, well, after seeing how grotesque these creatures had become, Dan decided to abandon all sense of duty, mm-hmm. and I became a single father. One by one, the triops fought to the death in a miniature watery Hunger Games until one triop remained. But he wasn't alone in the tank. Interestingly, the triop's food contained fairy shrimp eggs, and as the final triop died in a fatal set of sit-ups, a couple of the shrimps survived. It was time to welcome Simon into the world.
Me, 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 me.
Over the next week, Simon went from strength to strength and grew into a backflipping super shrimp. Whilst the triops seemed like rampaging, mindless aliens, you could really see a soul behind his little eyes. If only that soul knew how much it was appreciated. Over the next few months, Simon Fever hit the internet. He created huge waves of love, both online and offline. I had requests for Simon t-shirts and plushies, and someone even emailed me asking if he'd consider dating a human. It was a weird time. He grew and grew and grew, and eventually impregnated his tankmate Linda, who either developed egg sacs or tumours on her body. We were never entirely sure. Unfortunately, this happiness couldn't last forever.
The death of Simon.
On the 4th of May, 2011, Simon moved on to the giant shrimp tank in the sky. The internet had a couple of days of mourning and many famous faces turned up at the shrimp funeral. After a beautiful and moving service, he moved onto his final resting place, the toilet.
R.I.P. Simon.
The London apartment.
Here we are, our pad in the big smoke.
Neither of us have ever called it that.
Too late to start. So, London, why would we choose to move away from lovely little, very cold Manchester down to this crazy giant busy city?
I feel like we'd both kind of done Manchester by then. Mm-hmm. I mean, you'd been there for 2 years, but I grew up there and I went there every weekend.
Yeah, we liked it, but it was time to go somewhere new. Plus, literally everyone we knew in real life lived in London and we wanted to try actually having friends.
That's because instead of socializing with other students at university, you only talk to people on the internet.
I regret nothing.
Yep, it was scary, but we felt like it was the right thing to do. We started working with Radio 1, all the people that made videos lived in the same place, and we both felt like we needed to take that big jump.
You mean utterly terrifying freefall into a strange land where we had no experience.
Yeah!
Again, I feel like we were ridiculously lucky getting this apartment. We spent an entire week getting lost around London looking at places that were all horrible.
Like that one that became available as the landlord left, which I think meant that the old lady who used to live in it died.
I felt like she died in the armchair in the lounge, which would explain the mysterious stain it had.
We learned a lot of lessons about places looking better in photos on the website.
Yeah.
One place even had chairs that turned out to be painted polystyrene.
Like, literally.
Yeah.
It was a polystyrene chair. Then there was the time that we got lost in Shadwell and you thought that we were going to die.
Thanks for bringing that up, Dan.
Mm.
We did find a place in the end, though, and it was awesome, even if it was totally unfurnished. And when we moved in, all we had was boxes and a beanbag.
Yeah, we had to buy a lot of cheap furniture and learn to assemble it very quickly, which might explain why literally all of it fell apart in the first 2 months. 2 years later, though, and we're settled with well-built furniture, and we're proper Londoners.
I'll never forget my wild northern roots.
Right, let's give them a tour.
Dan's room.
The main reason we picked this place is because the bedrooms are gigantic. Most of the bedrooms in London were like tiny coffins, but as people who never go outside, we needed a big hamster cage.
Yeah, now we have enough room each to sleep, film videos and do aerobics.
You have literally never done an aerobic.
But I could. I would like the listeners to know that I just did a little star jump.
Congratulations. My bedroom also had an old piano in it, which I was told hasn't been moved since the house was built 100 years ago.
I bet it has ghosts in it.
Don't ruin my bedroom. Phil's room.
My room also came with a piece of furniture. Not a ghost piano, though. A giant bed made entirely out of wicker.
Literally, it's like a gigantic picnic basket. It's pretty hideous.
I mean, I don't want to offend whoever weaved my bed, but the only reason I kept it is I couldn't work out how to get it through my doorway.
Hallway.
Good hallway. Nice light walls that we've destroyed by banging chairs and camera equipment against them.
Do you think there's any chance we'll get our deposit back?
We've destroyed this place so much we'll probably have to buy the whole thing.
Also, good carpet for lying on if you're having a crisis.
Kitchen.
That bloody door. You'd think the idea of a completely glass door leading into your kitchen sounds nice and fancy. No, it's a death trap.
Pretty much every night when the lights are turned off, the glass door turns into an invisible wall of pain. My nose is twitching just remembering all of the incidents. Lounge.
I was just excited to have a fireplace, to be honest.
I don't trust gas fires. I really don't understand how they work, so I'm constantly afraid I'm going to blow up the whole of London every time there's a cold morning.
This is also probably the geekiest room in existence. There isn't a single surface that isn't covered with some kind of TV or game merchandise.
I'd have it no other way.
Then we have our trusty sofa, where we spend 99% of our lives. I think initially I crushed the sofa cushion into the shape of my spine, but now I've spent so much time slouching on it, my spine has molded to fit the shape of the sofa crease.
Office.
The totally random third floor of our apartment, which is just one little square room.
For over a year when we moved in, this was only known as the Room of Shame. It was the place we threw all our boxes of stuff from Manchester, but as time went on, we only added to it with all the cardboard boxes from the furniture we bought.
Turns out it's quite a cool little cave for putting our computers in, adding one sofa bed for guests and a couple of funky cushions, and voila, you have a gaming channel zone.
I'm glad it has a purpose now. I always feel bad for an unused room. Now it's the home of all our geeky videos and cooperative rage. Toilet.
So one of our viewers kindly decided to give us a door-length One Direction poster as a moving-in gift. We had no idea where to put it for ages until we decided to stick it on the inside of the toilet door.
There's about 10 centimetres of room between the door and your face when you're sat in the toilet, so the idea of forcing our guests to stare at a giant grinning Harry Styles head was very funny.
We always look forward to the loud, "What the?" when someone sees it for the first time. Oh, the things those boys have seen in there.
Stairs.
Our apartment is technically on the third floor, but because it's so weird, everything is actually on the fourth.
We nearly died moving in.
Oh,
imagine
God.
Carrying a flat pack sofa up four flights of stairs during the hottest August England has ever had.
I honestly think it's the closest I've come to dying from exhaustion. I remember us lying on the floor panting for at least an hour, though without those stairs, we'd literally never exercise, so we're begrudgingly grateful.
Thank you, Death Stairs. And the secret staircase.
Yep, at the bottom of our stairs is the secret staircase to the sub-apartment.
This is where we keep things like our red room, the portal from the old apartment, and our team of monkeys that wrote our book for us.
Phil, stop! They know too much! Abort, abort, change the subject!
Dan?
Yes?
Do you want to play a game?
Don't saw voice me.
Well, it's a pretty high-stakes game.
Okay, fine. What is this, Phil?
This is the Which Phil and Dan Dining Chair Are You? Game.
Quiz.
This is a quiz that tells you which of our dining chairs you are and gives you a little description of your personality as well.
Nice.
Do you want to do it?
Yes, please.
Okay, Dan.
Yeah.
Cheese or trees?
Trees are really beautiful, but I'm scared of them.
Yeah?
Okay, Okay, I am gonna go with trees.
Hedgehog or hamster?
I can't think of hamster after Suki, it's just way too traumatic. I'm gonna go with hedgehog.
Do you believe in ghosts?
See, that's interesting, because I objectively don't believe in ghosts, and yet, as I talked about in a video, it's all I'm afraid of, so I think on one level, I must be afraid that they're real, so I'm going to go with a yes.
Volcano or black hole?
Oh, dude, man. Oh, that's hard. They're both so cool. There's something about space and physics that makes them so much more mysterious. I'm going to go with black hole.
You are the grey chair.
Nice.
Dark, mysterious, and slightly sinister,
yes.
You share a spiritual bond with Dan.
Holy cow.
And would choose a leather coat over a fluffy jumper. There's a small chance you're a vampire and you are probably hiding a huge secret. Unfortunately, you can't tell anyone, as you're a chair.
Damn, that got real at the end there.
It did.
I feel sorry for all the unsentient chairs out there. I got myself.
You got yourself.
That's pretty cool.
See, painstaking work went into this quiz.
Good quiz, Phil.
Thanks. Shall I do it too?
Phil, cheese or trees?
Well, if you watch my videos, you'll know I hate cheese with a fiery vengeance. So trees.
Okay, hedgehog or hamster?
Obviously hamster.
You were the breeder.
Yeah.
Tumblr or Twitter?
I'm going to go with Twitter because I use it more.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I like it more. I talk to people on Twitter.
And
I
now
like
an
it.
Important question. Don't know where you're at when you wrote this. Do flies have feelings?
I think that they do have feelings. Little thought processes. Did you see them? Like, where am I going to go?
Thoughts.
Where am I going to go?
Am I going to fly into this window or this bit of window?
I'm going to land on your stage.
100 times.
Yes.
Results. Okay. This is set in stone. You can never retake the chair quiz. Phil, you are the blue chair. Sorry that 90% of your life is taken up by Phil's butt. You prefer walks by the beach to crazy nightclubs.
True.
Sometimes you sneeze and blink at the same time, which is meant to be impossible. Don't tell the government or they will experiment on you. You would make a great rocket scientist, dog groomer, or FBI agent. Unfortunately, that is not possible, as you are a chair.
It got me. That's my chair.
Again, Phil,
yeah.
Why was that so deep at the end? You didn't need to make this so philosophical.
It's a deep quiz. I think I'd make a good rocket scientist.
Don't blame me for not trusting you to build my rocket ship. I don't think I'd leave you with my dog, to be honest.
Oh. Welcome to Phil's Hamster Breeding Guide. So you want to breed hamsters, you came to the right place. This will fulfill every hamstery need you have. Even if you don't want to breed a hamster, come learn something. Oh, you want some context? Okay. The Hamster Ball of Context. For a lot of my school life, my nickname was Hamster Boy. Not because I looked like one. Well, I did kind of look like one, but that's besides the point. I was the school's infamous hamster breeder. It all started when I spent half my life begging my parents for a chinchilla or a rat. I almost got close to owning the chinchilla of destiny until my mum Googled them and found out they can run up walls and hop up to 3 meters high. She's also afraid of rats and their tails. Totally ratist. So to make me shut up, my parents bought me a male hamster Norris and a female Phoebe with the hope of breeding them and selling the babies. Interesting hamster facts. Syrian hamsters are solitary creatures. They love their own space and will fight to the death if you put them in a cage together. It's like a fluffy Mortal Kombat. Hamsters are colorblind, so if Morpheus offered them the blue pill or the red pill, they would probably just bite his hand. Male hamsters are called boars, and females are called sows. One human year is equivalent to 25 hamster years, so make sure you prepare 25 individual birthday parties a year. Hamsters can see for a distance of 6 inches, so they probably just think you are a magical pair of hands rather than a human. And hamsters are both telepathic and telekinetic. How to tame a hamster? Okay, this may sound weird, but I would get into the bath with my hamsters. Fully clothed. No water. I'd bring their food bowl and wear cricket gloves so they wouldn't bite me, and I'd just let them run all over my legs and hands to get used to me as a human, and then I would keep returning them to their food bowl if they walked too far away from it, and then they would trust me and associate me with snacks. I appreciate this sounds very weird, and it's a very strange mental image, but it works. How to breed a hamster? First, set up a tiny romantic meal and play some high-pitched Barry White music. The female hamster gets in the mood for hamster loving every 4 days, so you may be lucky and they'll go at it first time, or you'll have a fluffy Mortal Kombat situation for the other 3 days. You'll realise it's going to happen as the female hamster goes completely flat like she's been run over by a small tractor and doesn't want to kill the male. Then, just give them a few moments of privacy. I held up a small cardboard screen as the miracle of nature happened, and just remember to remove the male before they fight again. Pregnant hamster. Your hamster will be pregnant for about 15 to 17 days. Once you start to see her balloon, leave her alone. Just quietly fill up the food and don't play with her or put her in a ball or Hamster Sky restaurant. Birth. Hamsters can have between 3 and 12 babies. Mine had 13. Norris was like a prize stallion. You'll soon hear the mewing of tiny babies. It'll sound like meow. Bask in the godlike feeling of creating new life. Do not disturb the nest or pick up the babies. This causes a hamster ball Lecter-style situation where the mother will eat her own young. Scatter some broccoli or grated carrot for them to eat, but do not touch them or the cage. In about 4 weeks, you'll be ready to separate the boys and girls into different cages, and 3 weeks after that, they are ready to be rehomed. Make sure you sell them to friendly and loving homes and enjoy your millions of pounds if you strap a paper horn to one and sell it to Richard Branson as a baby unicorn. Note, this is fraud. Please don't sell false unicorns. My hamsters. So, if you were wondering, which I'm sure you are, my baby hamsters were called Kevin, Barry, Buffy, Spike, Tom, Jerry, Treacle, Badger, Snowball, Lucy, Winston, Mouse, and Fluff. Disclaimer, even though I consider myself a hamster pro, you should probably consult experts before embarking upon your own hamster adventures.
Why Phil can't have a hamster? Look, right, I'm not a bad guy. Phil just can't have a hamster. Here are the reasons. Number one, it is against our tenancy agreement. I know Phil keeps saying he'll hide it in his wardrobe, but that is not a long-term solution. Number two, we travel too much and we have no friends. Who could we leave it with when we fly off to a YouTube convention or to do some video job? He can't mail it to his family up north. Until we have robot maids that can feed and water pets, we're just away too much. Number three, it would be too noisy. I know very well the horror of a hamster chewing the metal bars of its cage at 3 a.m. when you haven't slept for a week. Also, how can we film videos with cage clanking and wheels squeaking in the background? Don't tell me it'd be a cute background noise. We all know it isn't true. Four, hamsters are unbelievably smelly. If how well Phil maintains the state of our kitchen and how often he cleans it are anything to go by, this would not work out well for our noses. We've already filled our apartment with a dangerous amount of scented candles, and the fire hazard required to outsmell a hamster is not something I want to risk. And five, moral boundaries. Those familiar with the story of my hamster Suki will know that I do not underestimate the intelligence of small fuzzy rodents and how much they grasp the true nature of existence in this universe and freedom. Sure, you might get a dumb one that happily wheels itself dizzy for 10 hours a day and then sleeps, but what if I have to deal with another freakishly intelligent one? I cannot bear to make the decision between trapping something against its will and letting it brave the harsh reality of nature. I mean, come on, we live in London. It'll get eaten by a giant rat in 2 minutes. Conclusion, I'm sorry, Phil, it's not personal, but at the moment, we just can't get a hamster. I hope that this has convinced some of you why I feel the need to make this decision, but I do believe it is the right one. Perhaps one day soon, Phil will have a garden or his own home, and he can turn it into the hamster breeding paradise of his dreams. He's a weird guy, isn't he?
The story of Dan and Phil on BBC Radio 1.
Nice. Very radio voice.
Thank you.
Is that, did you use it then, didn't you?
I did. That's my radio voice. BBC Radio 1.
One.
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 Should we tell the story?
Maybe.
Okay. So, we have an actual radio show on the BBC.
Well, you're saying that now, Dan. We might have been totally fired whenever this is being listened to.
To be fair, that is a definite possibility. So, how on earth did this all happen?
Well, the story of us on the BBC goes all the way back to 2011. Two peeps called Laura May and Alistair working at Radio 1 were putting together a talent show they were doing live in Edinburgh. They thought it'd be interesting to get someone to perform on webcam, so they looked on the internet and decided it'd be cool and forward-thinking to invite a vlogger. For some reason, they decided we were the ones that they wanted to contact.
I'm shocked you didn't scare them off for 100 reasons.
Maybe they liked our weirdness.
The only possible explanation. I'm not sure what talent they thought you could perform talking to camera.
That's basically the one thing I'm good at. Mm. But you're right, I had no idea what to do, and I was just terrified. So I asked if Dan could join me to make it easier, and they said yes.
So then we had to decide on an act. And what did we choose to do? The blindfolded cat face game. Yes, we were just going to draw a cat on each other's faces. I have no idea what we were thinking.
I can't believe this led us to getting a radio show.
The day came and we were watching the live stream of the show with hundreds of people in a room watching, all kinds of jugglers and magicians and people, you know, with actual talents. And then they introduced us.
The internet connection was so terrible that we basically looked like 15 yellow pixels, and Nick Grimshaw forgot Dan's name.
If I recall, he kept calling me the one in the black t-shirt.
So we did our game, which Dan totally cheated on, by the way. You can see his eyes were
Hey,
open.
It was an accident, right? I only glanced. And yes, 3 minutes of uncomfortable face-touching noises was our debut on British radio.
Of course, I lost. So my forfeit was to get a plate of whipped cream smacked right in my face, which completely ruined my clothes I was wearing, as they never stopped smelling like mouldy cheese.
No.
However, afterwards, we were told that so many of our followers tried to watch the stream that we actually broke the website.
We are the original internet Godzillas, Phil and I. Do not let us near any tiny website or we will accidentally crush it like a clumsy giant.
This weird talent show incident apparently got people talking at the BBC, as one day we got a fateful email from a man named Joe.
Right out of nowhere, they asked us if we wanted to come down to London to discuss making a radio show. We kinda freaked out.
It was terrifying, but really exciting. I remember walking past Gary Barlow on the way to the Radio 1 building and reaching for my phone to scream at my mum before remembering that's probably not acceptable behaviour.
We felt like the two biggest dorks in the world walking through this cool, crazy office with our weird haircuts.
We were the biggest dorks in the world.
Oh, definitely. So, we met up with the guys we've been emailing and they said, how would you like a 2-hour video show on the radio on Christmas Day? 2 hours of music and video weirdness from us beamed across the world on the radio and in video on the website on the most magical day of the year. The worst slash best idea ever.
We then spent about 2 months wrestling with crazy microphone equipment, inflatable sharks and balloons filled with flour to make what became the amazing Phil and Dan Is Not On Fire Christmas show on Radio 1.
Oh, look at that little thumbnail of us wrapping Scott Mills in Christmas paper.
Memories.
He still thinks we're weird, doesn't
he? Does.
I don't think we ever...
That's not the best way to introduce yourself to someone.
No, everyone thinks we're so weird. It was pretty amazing, though. I remember my family gathering around the TV in the lounge, not at all understanding how a radio show could be watched. It was a weird Christmas day, as I spent most of it shaking with nerves.
We were proud of our first radio baby, and apparently so were the BBC, as they actually emailed us back. The next time they contacted us, they wanted us to do a documentary on internet dating, as they figured we would know stuff about the internet.
I don't think either of us are really experts in online dating, but we rose to the challenge, however, and made a wonderfully strange documentary about love on the internet, which involved me calling a TV celebrity property expert called Sarah Beanie to tell her how to install Skype. I still have her mobile number, by the way.
Use that power wisely, Dan. Fast forward to summer, and apparently they liked us enough to give us another Christmas show for 2012. This was one of the final pushes that convinced us to make the leap of faith and move to London.
Though this time it was just a 1-hour show instead of two, so maybe they liked us half as much.
Well, obviously not, as at the start of December, right in the middle of crafting our second hour-long audiovisual special, the bomb was dropped.
Out of nowhere, we got a message from the big boss asking us to make a formal pilot for a full-time radio show. He wanted us to take over the old format of the request show, where people call in to request songs and make it a big Dan and Phil internet video explosion.
This was on top of our Christmas show we were making, our own YouTube videos, and everything else we had going on, including Christmas.
We got it done though and sent it off, and then a few days before Christmas we were invited to the BBC and got told the news. We'd have our own Dan and Phil show on actual BBC Radio 1.
It was mental. Neither of us could believe it at all. Then they told us that they wanted us to start in the first week of the new year.
Not only did we have to get everything for the show prepared in time, we had to learn how to actually be radio DJs. Usually people spend years practicing in their spare time on student radio and on 4 a.m. shifts for your local jazz station, but us, we were given less than 2 weeks.
Now, I'm not a very coordinated guy. I don't drive because I can't multitask, and I'm 100% sure I can't be trusted with other people's lives. A radio desk is like a rocket ship.
There are about 4,000 buttons that all do different, powerful, and terrifying things, and any one of them could blow up the BBC. The multitasking of driving the desk and presenting is a challenge in itself, but then obviously we had to go and create what I honestly think is the most complicated radio show of all time. First of all, it was a request show, so it was completely unpredictable. We couldn't plan any timings, as anyone could choose any song, and the callers could talk for as long as they liked. Also, we had to stand up, which made it super awkward to press the buttons or look at notes, as we were told, hey, all the best DJs are standing these days, it's just better energy. Coupling our ridiculously complicated games like Fan Wars that had us juggling 2 callers, 2 possible winning songs, and 6 sound effects ready to go. Then the cherry on the cake, the whole thing was streamed live on camera. We were very jealous of the other DJs whose shows were mainly sitting in a chair looking at notes when you need them and casually having banter with your pals. Our show was like a rave filled with barnyard animals set on fire.
And a beautiful flaming animal party it was.
There was only so much preparation we could do before the time came for our first live show.
I don't think I slept for about 3 days due to nerves, and even though we came to the BBC every day to practice, I felt like a flailing octopus made out of jelly.
Ah, the first show. What a crazy story. Firstly, we had no time to prepare, as everyone in the building was coming up to us all day to wish us luck, which was ironically the least helpful thing at that moment.
Then, just before we went on, we were told that we had to swap studios so we wouldn't be able to chill out in the one until we went live. Instead, we had to wait for the chart show to finish and walk in during the final song. This changed the plan. My worst thing ever is changing the plan.
I don't think the people doing the chart show fully appreciated how much we were internally freaking out as we were carrying the cameras and our laptops in our hands as they just leisurely picked up their coats with only 1 minute left of the final song.
We managed to log into the computers, plug everything in, stand up, and with about 20 seconds left, we were in position.
Hi, we are Dan.
And Phil.
And you're listening to BBC Radio 1.
Then the camera fell off its tripod. We're not joking, it snapped.
During our first live link on the radio, of course it would happen to us. Joe Harland, one of the most important men at the BBC, then ran into the room and spent the first 5 minutes holding it up, trying to be as still as possible until we played our first song.
The next 2 hours were the slowest and fastest, craziest hours of my life. But we did it.
At the end, I had nothing left. It's like I had completely exhausted all the energy in my body, mind, and soul. We had no idea how it went, but then everyone came into the studio and congratulated us. We sat around with our team and had a giant cake, and that was the first Dan and Phil show on Radio 1.
So how's it different to videos?
Lots of people ask us how doing live radio compares to YouTube.
Honestly, it's pretty much the same. Mm. We're just having funny, entertaining conversations about things, but instead of having to sit and edit and put it on the internet, it happens live.
Which is fun and also terrifying. I cannot believe that I haven't accidentally sworn yet.
At the end of the day, there are different skills like video editing or pressing buttons on a complicated desk, but the only difference is saying, and up next on Radio 1, it's Britney Spears.
Right, let's walk them through the Dan and Phil Show features.
Ooh.
First one,
internet news.
Very nice, Phil.
We read out all the weirdest and wonderful news stories we found on the internet that week that regular radio listeners may have missed out on. It wouldn't be complete without our signature lensless 3D glasses.
This is the internet news. Dan versus Phil.
Every week, for over a year, we came up with a new embarrassing, physically degrading challenge to attempt against each other live on camera. From putting our hands in Wellington boots and jumping over obstacles like horses to crawling across floors in sleeping bags like caterpillars, the lowest moments of our lives were streamed for the entire world to laugh at. Fan wars.
The idea was to pit two fan bases against each other live on the radio for the right to have their artist's song played.
Mm-hmm.
Two live callers have to compete at a mystery challenge that could be gargling the song, animal impressions, or our favourite, noise treasure hunt, where they had to run around their house making noises.
Incredible chaos.
Sorry, I don't know how to internet.
Laughing at people that can't use technology, basically. In a nice consensual way, though, people sent in stories of their elderly relatives or friends not knowing how to do basic computer tasks for all the people who spend their lives on the internet to chuckle about. The intensive use.
From our very first Christmas show where we made Tim Westwood build a reindeer out of Play-Doh.
Sometimes I remember we actually did that.
We actually did that.
I know.
We forced people to answer ridiculous questions as quickly as possible while enduring some kind of distraction. From radio DJs to pop stars and vloggers, many people have gone through this trial.
And finally,
the 7-second challenge.
We turned Phil's YouTube phenomenon into the most intense per second radio feature of all time, attempting to do whatever the other person says in a ridiculously short amount of time. We play the 7-second challenge live on the radio, and the winner picks a song of their choice. We're actually award winners, weren't we, Phil?
Did you know our show is actually Academy Award winning?
Uh-huh.
Okay, it's for the UK's Radio Academy, but fancy and serious nonetheless.
It was actually the People's Choice Award, but I guess depending on how you look at it, it's either the least important award or the only one that actually means anything.
That was a terrifying, serious evening filled with crazy famous presenters and suspiciously energetic performers.
Mm.
Dan also offended a professional footballer.
Yeah, I've put that in a box, Phil. I don't talk about that now.
Then afterwards, we went to a crazy celebrity club and ended up falling asleep on Nick Grimshaw's floor with his dog.
I think that world isn't really meant for us, Phil.
No.
We're definitely stay inside on the internet in pajamas kind of guys.
The award was actually golden headphones made out of steel.
Yeah, which looked very cool, but you couldn't put them on because, you know, how do you fit them over your head?
Yeah.
Hey, what happens if we ever don't live together?
Just have to saw it in half. Have an ear each.
The golden ear pod.
I'll take the right one. We did some crazy things as well.
I know, I don't know why, but Radio 1 actually let us out of our apartments and the tiny studio into the real world to interact with famous bands and pop stars.
I always found it terrifying. I like to think we offered a unique form of entertainment that the fans of artists wouldn't usually find.
Yeah, that's one way of putting it. From our first event with the infamous story of One Direction, which we'll get to later, to going on stage at a festival I attended as a teenager, we certainly have a lot of memories.
There was the time we did the legendary quiz with Macklemore and Ryan Lewis.
I remember going to Reading Festival, doing intent interviews where we covered a tent with creepy fan art.
Introducing Imagine Dragons on stage to like a billion people.
You had a great time doing that one. There's a funny story here. Phil had never been on a stage before in front of a big crowd of people. And the thing is, even if you can't hear yourself when you're speaking into a microphone at an event, everyone can hear you very clearly coming out of the speakers. So I came on and I said, who's ready for some music? And then Phil...
I didn't know that you weren't meant to shout, so I shouted into the microphone.
What exactly did you say, Phil? Why don't you tell
them? Close your eyes and picture a flaming mythical beast!
I think the video is still on YouTube
it
if you want
so
to
bad.
Die of secondhand embarrassment. But then there were some good times, like meeting Taylor Swift, where we drew each other blindfolded.
I almost drew on her dress with Sharpie.
You nearly Sharpied on her incredibly expensive dress, didn't you?
I did.
That would have gotten you fired.
And then Big Weekend, you went on your own and
I
had
did.
The Satsuma incident with One Direction.
No, don't bring that up. Okay, right. So, I was backstage at Radio 1's Big Weekend, and I'm the kind of guy, I always need something to hold. Because if you're not awkwardly holding something, it's like, what do you do with your hands? So I was walking around, I saw a fruit bowl. I decided to pick up a Satsuma so I could just look, you know, busy eating something. But then a bunch of people were like, hey, let's go One Direction. And I was still holding this Satsuma and there was nowhere to put the peel. So then I was just stood at the side of the stage watching One Direction holding this Satsuma. And I was on TV and everyone saw me behind Harry Styles holding a Satsuma peel.
It was hilarious. Also, we did some drawing with Ariana Grande and she actually gave me her Katia tiara afterwards.
Yes, I think that's fallen by.